once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, 87.9 FM, Mojo Radio in Point Arena, California. My name is the V-Man, and today on Rockin' the Boat, we're going to be discussing the state of the global justice movement. Joining me live in the studio is Kevin Danaher, co-founder and public education director of Global Exchange. And we're also joined in the studio by Maya Ramnath, a graduate student in history at UC Santa Cruz, who has been active in many social justice movements opposing neo-imperialism. Stand by, stay tuned for an in-depth discussion on the global justice movement here on Rockin' the Boat. From the Enron accounting scandal to Halliburton's lucrative contracts in Afghanistan and Iraq to the recent blackouts in the northeastern U.S., corporate crime, fraud, and malfeasance seem to be running wild. But a growing chorus of voices are rising up in resistance and demanding a stake in the global economy. What seems to have found a birth in Seattle in November 1999 has only grown since 9/11 and the war on terror. The U.S. invasion and subsequent occupation of Iraq has really made it clear to many people what we are up against. The next target in the sights of this growing movement for global justice and peace is the World Trade Organization, the international body which writes the rules of trade between nations whose policies benefit large corporations. On the website of the WTO, they describe their true aim, quote, "The goal is to help producers of goods and services, exporters and importers, conduct their business," end quote. From September 10th through 14th, World Trade Organization delegates from 142 member nations will gather in Cancun, Mexico, for a major summit. The main task will be to take stock of progress in negotiations and other work under the Doha Development Agenda. Agriculture and trade regulations are at the top of that agenda. As in years past, tens of thousands of indigenous farmers, students, environmentalists, labor leaders, academics, consumer groups, food safety advocates, and human rights activists will be in the streets protesting. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be discussing what's at stake in Cancun and where the global justice movement is going. Joining me in the studio is Kevin Danaher and Maya Ramnath. Kevin Danaher is a co-founder and public education director of Global Exchange, the San Francisco-based human rights organization dedicated to promoting environmental, political, and social justice around the world. Having traveled the world over, he is familiar with the problems and prospects of economic development in many third world countries. Kevin is the author of many books, including Globalize This, The Battle Against the World Trade Organization and Corporate Rule, Corporations Are Gonna Get Your Mama, Globalization and the Downsizing of the American Dream, and more recently, Democratizing the Global Economy, The Battle Against the World Bank and the IMF. Also in our studio is Maya Ramnath. She is a graduate student in history at UC Santa Cruz and has been active in many social justice movements which oppose neo-imperialism. Maya has worked with the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine and the Vandenberg Action Coalition locally. She is currently organizing with the Santa Cruz Peacemakers at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, who are sending a delegation from Santa Cruz to Cancun to the Parallel People's Forum on Alternatives to the WTO. I want to welcome you both to our studios tonight.
Thanks. Thank you.
Why don't we begin with you, Kevin Danaher? I don't want to spend too much time talking about the problems with the global economy, but I think it would be beneficial for some of our listeners if you could just sort of lay out a framework of what is wrong with the current state of affairs in the global economy.
Well, there's three crises. There's a social crisis of growing inequality. The richest 20% of the world's people consume 86% of the world's resources, which means the poorest 80% of the world's people try to survive on 14% of the world's resources. We have more children dying in sub-Saharan Africa each year from AIDS alone than there were children died during the entire Nazi Holocaust. There are more people dying crossing the border between Mexico and the United States than died crossing the Berlin Wall under communism. We could go on and on and on. The inequality is getting worse, and in fact, the goal of the Bush administration, as every imperial administration in the post-World War II period in Washington, has been to maintain the global inequality. We are 5% of the world's people consuming 25% of the world's wealth, and they want to keep it that way. And that's what this war in Iraq and all this other resource wars is all about. Now, the second crisis is the environmental crisis. Every biological system, whether it's underground water, topsoil, rivers, glaciers melting, the air pollution, etc., all the biological systems are in collapse. And there's a spiritual moral crisis of a system that says success is defined by the quantity of things you own rather than the quality of your relationships with other human beings and with Mother Nature. So clearly we're going to win. Our life values nonviolence paradigm is going to beat the violence money paradigm. But it's going to be determined whether it's quick or not is by whether we get activists or not. If people are going to sit on their hands and watch TV and get high every night and not get out there in the streets, this stuff isn't going to change. And it's why the Constitution of the United States starts out with "we the people," because it's up to we the people to change this situation. It's not going to come from the Bush administration. Just one point about the WTO. The World Trade Organization, I think, is the most dangerous institution on the planet because it is writing a constitution for the entire world. And it is a money values constitution with only big transnational corporations having a seat at the table. So if you look at the way transnational corporations work, they're not rooted in place. They are not based in a particular community. Their economic strength is that they can cut and run. It's why the United States now imports more computer equipment from China than China buys from the United States. It's not China. It's Dell, Compaq, Macintosh, Intel, Hewlett-Packard shut their factories down here, moved them to China because they can pay workers a buck or two a day and treat them like trash. So if we the people allow the World Trade Organization to write a constitution for the planet that enshrines the power of transnational corporations over we the people and our government agencies, we're screwed and the planet is screwed.
Maybe you can touch upon exactly who controls the WTO. It seems to me that the WTO does the bidding of the United States. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's not as blatant as in the World Bank and the IMF. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were set up at the end of World War II with your voting power in proportion to how much money you put in. So the U.S., that was the U.S.'s way, U.S. government's way of having veto power. The WTO, technically speaking, each country has one vote, but the way things get decided, anybody who's ever participated in big international institutions, you know that there's all these PrepCom meetings that go on before where drafts get written. And that's really what it is. It's a struggle over wording because they're writing law. So in the Doha round 2 years ago, they ran away to Qatar in the Persian Gulf to have a meeting because there's no civil rights or protest allowed. And they came up with this Doha round, Doha being the capital city of Qatar, where they wrote the document. And it says, for example, it has sentences that say, it is the right of all countries to safeguard the health of their people when it comes to buying medicines. Now, the problem for the U.S. government, the Bush administration, is they're getting huge campaign contributions from pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies don't want to hear any crap about, oh, you have the right to feed your people by buying cheaper pharmaceuticals from Brazil or India or South Africa. They want a global monopoly. So there's a lot of things that the Bush administration would like to be able to do at these meetings coming up in Cancun to trade off, like say, okay, we'll cut our farm subsidies so you third world farmers aren't getting wiped out by our subsidized exports. But it's an election year, so Bush can't trade his own farm votes in the U.S. Midwest for a bunch of third world governments. So what we're going to see in Cancun, this is my prediction, I think the ruling class of the planet is perfectly poised to get a big foot in their ass right now. I think the talks are going to just collapse. There's going to be thousands of people out in the streets, and we'll make the news. The people out in the streets will make the news.
Well, can you go a little further with that? How are these talks going to collapse? I mean, what is going to push that? Is it the delegates in the meeting? Is it a combination of the delegates with coupled with the people in the streets?
Right.
What
is
it?
If you go back to Seattle and you look at what happened there, how it collapsed, we're out in the streets. There's like, 45,000, 55,000 of us out in the streets with 8,000 to 12,000 people sitting down doing direct action to actually block the meetings from happening. That protest on the outside stiffened the spines of third world government leaders on the inside to finally step forward to the first world, to the industrial country governments like the U.S. and Britain and France, and say, hey, look, we've been getting screwed in this whole operation. You guys develop the policies in these green rooms where we're not even permitted. Then you come to the larger meetings and you dump it on us as fait accompli, and either we're going to go along or else, hey, we'll cut you off from investment and World Bank loans and all this. So the unity of our forces on the outside, everything from, you know, the butterflies to the steelworkers, our unity created disunity on the inside. So you had first world versus third world governments. You had U.S. versus Europe on some very important taxation and bioengineered food issues. And you had divisions within the governments themselves between the trade ministers and the environment ministers. Because you got to remember, a lot of these European countries, the environment ministers actually have some clout. There's green parties that hold seats in parliament and stuff. So there was so much fighting going on inside that they collapsed and they didn't even issue a communique at the end. It's the only time in history where a world trade ministers meeting ended in total collapse, nothing at the end of it. And I think we could see a similar thing in Cancun if we really get out there and mobilize people.
That's the voice of Kevin Danaher, co-founder of Global Exchange. And I'm also joined in the studio by Maya Ramnath, and she is a local activist, grad student at UC Santa Cruz. And this is Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Let's talk a little bit about, we've kind of laid out the problems, and maybe we can have Maya, maybe you can address the kinds of alternatives that we are putting forth, and maybe you can sort of articulate the economy, the global economy that we'd like to see in the future.
Well, I think that's part of what's going to be discussed by during the alternative social forums, workshops, teach-ins that are going to be going on throughout that whole week, kind of parallel to the elite corporate discussions that are going to be going on. I did want to clarify the nature of the Santa Cruz delegation. The peacemakers from the Resource Center for Nonviolence, there are some members of the peacemakers who are involved, but it's really a much looser grouping of people that have been using the Resource Center as our meeting space, as our place to network with one another, share contacts for media, for fundraising opportunities. But it's much looser. There are students involved, a variety of independent people. I'm estimating 20 to 30 people locally, maybe more, maybe less. I know there are people on our list who are not going, that are planning to do ground support here, and people that I keep running into people who I didn't know about who are planning to go. I also want to say something about reasons for going, because I had some debate personally before deciding to go. I'd participated over the past few years in large-scale mobilizations against the FTAA in Quebec, the World Economic Forum in New York City, the IMF World Bank in D.C. What I didn't want to do in Cancun was summit hop, be part of a radical invasion of gringos coming to fuck shit up. That's exactly what I didn't want to do. I had to be convinced that we were wanted by people organizing on the ground and that there was some constructive use that we could serve. And I finally came to the conclusion that there's two really important functions, and one is to learn. I'm thinking that if citizens of the United States have the opportunity, I think it is so crucial for people to get out of this virtual reality bubble and see what things look like from the rest of the world. Statements that here sound like pass for radical subversion anywhere else in the world is a no-brainer about connections between corporate capital and U.S. imperialism, for example. It's so obvious from anywhere else in the world. So I think that we can only benefit from going down, and we have so much to learn from Mexican organizers, international organizers, in these forums. The other function is, it's kind of obscene that we have this privilege, but since we do, I think it's undeniable that the presence of a lot of internationals, particularly American internationals, gets media attention and radically changes the dynamic between police forces, forces of oppression, and activists. And this has been mentioned by the student groups, for example, who are organizing at the Autonomous University. There's a new student coalition formed called the Alianza Global S9, the Via Campesino, which is a coalition of regional farmers organizations, which is going. And they've expressed that sentiment that our presence may be helpful to them. You know, that's a kind of a gross exploitation of privilege, but that's one that I will use.
Kevin, maybe you can bounce off of what she just talked about and sort of lay out more about how some of these ideas can kind of gel, the fair trade, the organics, the farm movements.
Yeah, one of the things that that Maya brought up is the sensitivity that we have because we've truly become internationalists now in our spirits. I mean, in a sense, it's what global exchange has been all about since we started in 1988, is to go not as above people and not below them. Just go eye to eye as brothers and sisters on the same planet and get beyond this nationalism stuff. But understanding that if I go from the United States into Mexico and I break some window or something like that, I have no right to do that. That's not, if I'm doing it in my community and I'm willing to pay the consequences, but if I come in for a week as a tourist and I come in and I bust stuff, nah, that's not really good. And there's going to be a lot of people out there who are either out there for the first time or they're peasants that came all the way from Chiapas. They're really putting their lives on the line. They can't afford to have their physical security jeopardized by, you know, radical tourism and adventurist kind of politics. So what's cool about the organizing is right from the beginning, the U.S. groups, at least all the ones that I know, said, look, let's look at what the Mexican groups are working on anyway and highlight those so we come in behind them where they're doing the leadership of setting the agenda, and we come in and educate people. For example, agriculture. Agriculture, I would argue, is going to be the key issue for dumping this round in Cancun because you've got such a huge gap between what agriculture is in most third world countries. It was a colonial product, coffee, tea, cocoa. It was imposed at the end of a gun. It's an export crop. You can't eat it locally. And if it wasn't for force and violence and dictatorships using U.S. weapons and all this, it wouldn't be there. People would be using good land to feed their children, not, you know, export cut flowers to Holland and all this kind of nonsense. So they're getting totally screwed by the industrial countries subsidizing the export with our tax money, government money, subsidizing export of basic grains, corn, rice, wheat, soy, that is swamping third world farmers. You can land U.S. yellow number 2 corn in southern Africa cheaper than a peasant in South Africa or Zimbabwe can bring it to market. You can land U.S. rice in West Africa cheaper than a peasant can bring it to market. There's now U.S. corn flooding the Mexican market, highly subsidized because of NAFTA. NAFTA called for the reduction of Mexican corn tariffs that historically had kept out the U.S. subsidized corn. That corn's washing in there now. Where those farmers end up, they get knocked off their land. First place they go is ghettos in Mexican cities. Second place they go is ghettos in U.S. cities. So these people who talk about, oh, immigration, you say stop them when they talk about it in this racist tone. And say, you want to do something about it? You think those people want to come? You think they want to come because of the bright lights of L.A. or something like that? It's because of the disparity between the job opportunities and wage scales in Mexico and those here. Well, let's balance them out. Mexico is a fantastically rich country. So there's this massive protest movement around the conditions in Mexican agriculture that the corn farmers, which is the majority of Mexican peasants, they're being knocked off the land. The coffee farmers are being knocked out of business because of a low world market price. They're going to, that sentiment is going to be represented in the WTO somewhat forcefully by the Brazilian government, the Mexican government, the Indian government, different governments that have a big stake in this. It's impossible for Bush in an election year to say, I'm going to cut farm subsidies in order to please, they're really caught between a rock and a hard place. So if you look at the numbers, the industrial countries spend more subsidizing their agricultural exports than they spend in aid to the entire third world. So all of that kind of mythology and lies that they've been hiding behind, that's going to all come out, hopefully, during these meetings and the protests. At least we, Maya and I and other people in the movement are going to try and bring them out.
Talk about GMO foods, genetically modified organisms. Right now, the U.S., Argentina, and Canada have asked the WTO to set up a dispute settlement to decide whether or not the European Union's policies on GMO constitute a barrier to trade. You talked a bit about agriculture. What about GMO foods? Is that going to be a big part of the discussion, and where will those talks go?
It will, but it'll take place under the rubric of TRIPS, trade-related intellectual property rights. And what they're trying to do, what the big corporations are trying to do, is to say, look, we can patent life. We can come into India or Mexico and get some local genetic material that's maybe part of a tree or a crop or something that's been grown for hundreds and hundreds of years and that the local people use for all sorts of medicinal purposes and food and all that. And they should have the right to patent it and get a monopoly to produce that product in, and then go back to these people and try and sell them something they've been getting for free for hundreds of generations. This is absolutely insane, and anybody with half a brain is going to stand up to protect their community against that biopiracy. That's what it's referred to as, is biopiracy. So, of course, the U.S. government has been pressuring not just the Europeans, but the Mexican government and all governments to, let in these genetically modified crops. Well, the majority of countries in sub-Saharan Africa don't accept them. Brazil doesn't accept them. The European community, when the European community took the vote on not just keeping out U.S. genetically modified crops, but all from anywhere, including from Europe, because they said it's not a proven technology. You can't be sure until it's been out there for a while and people have been consuming it. And then if millions of people are consuming it, and then you find out 10 years down the road that it changes the genetic structure of bacteria in the human gut so that people can't metabolize nutrition anymore, and you wipe out half the world's people, who are we going to take to court? Who's going to be held responsible for that? And their attitude is, no, you put the product out before you test its safety, and we become the guinea pigs. So, for example, this has already happened in Mexico, which has a very strict law against genetically modified materials. Some U.S. stuff got in there, and it got spread out into the corn population where they were doing testing and finding U.S. genetically modified corn genes in the Mexican corn population, and it freaked a lot of people out and pissed a lot of people off, particularly the peasant groups, the farm organizations, and their supporters, groups like us, that want to see some democracy in Mexico. So that, again, is going to feed into this struggle that's going to take place in Cancun in early September.
That's the voice of Kevin Danaher of Global Exchange. We have about 8 minutes left, and I want to open up the phone line right now if there are any listeners who would like to call in, as this is live on Thursday, August 21st. Call into 427-3772. That's in the 831 area code, 427-FRSC. You're tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. People like yourself, Kevin, are described as protectionists. Take these arguments? What do you say to people that...
Well, think about how desperate these clowns are. The word protect is a totally positive word. You protect your health, you protect your family, you protect your home, you protect your community, you protect Mother Earth, the planet. There's nothing negative about the word protect. They're so desperate to try to name-call us into silence, rather than dealing with the substance and the science of our arguments and the spirit of our arguments. They want to call us names. So it used to be you're a communist, and now you're a protectionist or a terrorist. Or this name-calling does not settle a debate. Facts and analysis and reason and logic and dialogue with respect is what settles debates. We have been trying, Global Exchange, 50 Years Enough Network, a whole bunch of groups, we have been struggling for over 2 years to get the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank to debate us on TV. BBC and WorldLink TV agreed to accept all the costs of it to set up a global broadcast of a debate between the global justice movement, grassroots movement, and the World Bank and the IMF. The World Bank and the IMF have thousands of PhD economists. Thousands of PhD economists, and they will not debate us on a global TV broadcast. So I think that kind of tells you they know they're beat already at the ideological, moral, spiritual level, at the level of values. We have them beat because our values are life cycle values, human rights and the environment, and theirs are money values. And life values will always beat money values because Mother Nature's the home team. She always bats last, always has, always will. That'll never change.
I've always thought it was interesting how little the words conservatism and conservation seem to have to do with each other.
That's Maya Ramnath. She's a UCSC grad student in history and a local activist. She's going to be going to Cancun, Mexico. And Kevin, you probably have to get going here shortly, I think. So maybe we can end on, hope for the future. We just had 250,000 people in Larzac, France, and... in a sort of preemptive demonstrations there, and these demonstrations coming up. What do you see beyond Cancun? What is the vision for the future? Either one of you can take that. Maya, why don't you take it? You look like you're ready to say something about that.
Actually, what I was thinking of was more immediate. I was thinking about where Kevin needs to go in a moment, which is a fundraiser, which I am supposed to be one of the beneficiaries of, but I've actually been feeling very ambivalent about promoting. For one thing, because of this emphasis on agriculture that we've been talking about for the past few minutes, people can contribute to help activists from Santa Cruz travel down there, and that's important. None of us are rich. However, in relation to what a Mexican campesino has or a Mexico City student has, there's no comparison. And these are people who arguably have a lot less opportunity and a lot more need to get there and make their voices heard than we do. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that there are ways that you can not just contribute your money to us, but send funding to send a student, to send a campesino down there. And the way that you can do that is if you go to the Food First website, which is www.foodfirst.org, or www.unorca.org.mx. That's the Autonomous Regional Farming Organizations Coalition. They have you can contribute online there, or they can tell you how to send funds. There's also the students. I forgot the website for that. I'll find it, and if I can find it, I'll tell you in a moment.
No, it's great. I just want to encourage people to get involved. Get involved. There's groups that are doing all this stuff already. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just get involved.
Oh, you can fund students through the IMC, the Mexico City IMC website. That's mexico.indymedia.org.
Just on one final note, maybe, Kevin, abolition of capitalism or a green capitalist future? What do you say?
Well, the ultimate goal, obviously, is the replacement of capitalism with a system that is not based on money values, that puts the life cycle above the money cycle instead of the other way. The question is, how do you get there, and how do you recruit different sectors of the population? And if I approach that too dogmatically and use a banking concept of education, of assuming the person I'm talking to is empty and I'm a full vessel, I'm just going to pour my radical ideology in their head, we're not going to get very far. We won't build a mass movement. It'll be a small sectarian minority thing. So I think big tent, unity of diversity. That's the way nature does it. Look at the rainforest. It's unity of diversity. So we all have to see ourselves as recruiters. And everybody I interact with, I want to try and find a piece of them that I can hook up to, that I can resonate with, and try and convince them to become part of this movement.
And that's going to wind it up for us. Unless either of you, I'm going to offer a minute for each of you to give us a final thought. Maya.
Yeah, I'll just have a thought on future alternatives to the current global economic system. And obviously, I don't have the answers, but I do have a couple of suggestions for guiding principles, which are very different than the ones that the current system functions under. And one is, obviously, this isn't new, but to choose tactics based on the goals of social, economic, environmental justice rather than profit. That's so if choices are made according to that goal, you're going to come out with different forms than if you use the profit goal. The other principle, I think, is, again, very simple. I didn't invent this, but bottom up, not top down, autonomous grassroots communities determining what's best in their own interests. And I think if that's a guiding principle, the structures that come out are going to look radically different than the ones that we have.
Kevin, final word.
Yeah, final word is our greatest obstacle is within ourselves, the cult of powerlessness, believing that we can't do this. We can do this. We can change the course of history. I'd like to encourage people to go to the Global Exchange website. It's globalexchange.org. You will find dozens and dozens of ways on that website that you can get involved in various struggles around the world that link the interests of people on the other side of the planet with our own interests here in our own community. So please check out our website, globalexchange.org.
I thank you both for joining me here on Rockin' the Boat. That's going to wind it up for us. Join me again tomorrow on Rockin' the Boat from 5:30 to 6 o'clock. I'll be joined in the studio by John Hernandez and Leslie Scales on the 6th anniversary of their son's death due to chromium poisoning. We'll be discussing their case tomorrow on the show. Stay tuned to Rockin' the Boat and Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
We are born of nature, and in nature we will die. Oh, and if we don't make it, it's not because we didn't try. No, it's not because we didn't try. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my...